Minutes.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Okay, we have approval of the minutes for the January 21st, 2020 minutes, okay? All right. We're going to jump out of order here just a minute and go to some new business, discussion of a residential water leak. Okay.
Yes, Lisa Hall and Amanda Hall.
No, Amber.
Amber, I'm sorry, Amber Hall. Are here, this is, you'll see a handout that I laid out there. They had a rather significant leak, $2.1 million. We've never had anybody with that before, so congratulations. They're here to ask for any kind of relief that might be possible. What I put in front of you are our standard outside of the city. There's three options out there. Outside of the city, catastrophic rate. Outside of the city with the inside city rate. And then the outside of the city with the actual cost of our water, which is still rather significant. Still around $3,000 and change. So I'll go ahead and let you speak.
I really don't have anything to say except that I gave it all back. I swear, it ran right down the hill back into the lake. We don't live out here, so we don't, it's just a lake property. We have a camper out there, and there's one little water spigot. My bill is usually $9.80, so it's quite significantly bigger. But what it was doing is running, shooting basically straight into the rocks, and then my property, of course, the lake is very steep. At the bottom of my property is a core engineer flood easement, so that all the water runs off of Kedzie Circle and up on the top and goes down there. So I'm sure that's where the water went straight into the back of the lake. We didn't, we go out there once a week or so, but nobody noticed it, because it's not like sitting on top of anything. So at this point, we're just asking for mercy. I don't know what to do with $7,000 water bill. We don't have, I mean, like, it's not an inner, it doesn't generate income. It's just a piece of lake property we take kids out there and drink it.
Was it from freezing? Did the spigot freeze, or what happened?
Did they say what?
What we could see, there was a shark bite attack sitting on there that had failed. And I think you mentioned the plumber said.
Yeah, I had a plumber go out there, and I was his plumber, and he said, yeah, and he said, they use these fittings a lot. And he said, they don't tell you, and nowhere on the fitting does it say that it's not really meant for underground, but it's really not. So he said, he's changed out lots of them. And my brother is Christie's Construction. He does a lot of construction, and he said, since he found that out, he's called his guys and told them to go back out and see if those fittings out before something like this happens. But he put on one that he said he's been using for the last 15 years and hasn't failed once yet. But he said he has switched out a lot of those fittings. I don't know why they fail, but he said it doesn't say anywhere on the fitting that it shouldn't be used underground, but he, in his opinion, should not be used underground. We didn't know that when we built it. But he has gone out and replaced the fitting and hooked it back up and fixed it, so.
Okay, you guys have it.
I'm still trying to digest our options here. Or what we've done in the past.
Well.
What were you? Outside streetlights.
Well, Brent suggested we just charge her what it costs us. It's going to be about $3,075.
Is that it right there?
I think so.
That would be the lowest, right?
That's all, because I mean, that's what it cost us. That's our cost. But I don't want to set a precedent either.
Yeah, that's the danger.
Yeah, that's the thing. What have we done in the past?
It has always been a case-by-case basis.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and I think it.
Done anything, though? Have we dusted anybody?
Well, we've never had one this.
We've never had any near this.
I mean, he talked to me about it, so.
Okay.
Is this on our, hey, Brent, I know at least here in town, we have, I guess, when was this first notice? That's just a question here.
We noticed it when we read it, the reeds came back in, and they saw something that was very out of whack, and we sent people out and found the leak, found it just spinning.
Okay. And this covers whatever up to the point it was turned off?
That's the entire thing. Yeah, it started apparently right after we had read the first time, and then we, you know, within a day or something, we shut it off. Because we, between the read and the time we got out there, we shut it off.
And...
So if it's reduced, are we setting a precedent, though? I mean, that's what we need to find out.
We haven't seen one like this at this extent, and in my opinion, since you asked, even if we did it at our cost there, it's still a lot of money. I don't feel like anyone's getting off paying $3,000, but it is a bargain compared to $6,500.
And that's our cost?
That's our cost on the additional over and above our standard procedure. That's our cost. It is just a significant amount of water. I'll add a note there. It's all, and rightfully so, you can't see when we use that much.
Yeah, I was shocked when he told me. I was like, how did you not know that?
How did you not see that it spiked 2 million gallons
it was
in December?
70,000 gallons a day, which we're using 8 million. It didn't show anywhere on our stated. It was not like a major break that we see right away or through the water call and informs us the towers aren't holding water or something like that. This was just an unfortunate, it's just an unfortunate set of circumstances.
I live in Bentonville, and if your toilet is running, they call you and say, you probably have a leak somewhere because your bill is higher. I mean, before the bill ever gets there or whatever. So I'm like, if I just read 2 million gallons and nobody noticed? So it's hard for me to even fathom that, where they tell you your toilet's running all the time so your water's going to be out.
And they do have AMIs that talk to the electric meters. They bought those with the electric meters. That would drove that decision. And they have to have line of sight to those. And they don't always get them. It's a good system. It's an AMI system or an AMI. And mostly AMR because of the lake, because of the fact that networks and radio signals don't work very well.
So this is the bare bones cost, basically, the $3,075.
Yeah.
And
I mean, there's still the standard, catastrophic rate applied, just like our old superintendent. He paid all of that as well. But we're keeping that the same. We're not setting any precedent on that. It's just on that additional gallons over the 48, over the 50,000. And that's going down to our pure cost. I can't recommend it to go lower than that.
Oh, no, no.
Because that's not fair to the other people.
No, I totally agree.
That's the bottom. You see where we're at, and that's the lowest. And
How many service calls did we make out there to once this was figured out? Or was it just a reading and then go out there and turn it off?
It was the same as we'd always do. Yeah, we saw the extent, put it on the tablet. I got out there, saw that it was spinning, shut it off. And it's obviously not a house, so it's an easy shut off.
And was the break underground?
Underground on the customer side. And it had wallowed out a hole and was surfacing and just falling down. It wasn't spraying. It was spraying down below, but it had water on top of it, so it just...
So that's actually where it was broken. You can see there's this one, and there's, I think, the one more. But there's just rocks underneath that. So it basically shot all the dirt out and went underneath those rocks. And it wasn't noticeable to anybody. Mm-hmm. I think one thing your guy said that you should have been able to hear it. And I'm like, well, not unless I was standing by the water meter, which is up by the road, and you go there. So, yeah.
Okay. Oops, sorry about that. There. Thank you.
Did you want to see it?
Yeah.
That's where it broke. It's like,
oh, yeah.
It came out of that hole.
Yep.
But see, then it just went right into the rocks and down under.
And down under.
Back into the score.
We're not making money.
Right. But it is paying the catastrophic.
So that's it.
My feeling. Charles, I can't remember. Okay. I'm going to make a motion that we do make a adjustment to reflect our cost of the $3,075.31.
I will second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Okay, motion passes, and I'm sorry we couldn't do better, but that's our cost, so. And thank you for giving it back to the lake.
I told them that when they first told me I was going to tell Terry, but he told me, no, we went right back into the lake. So we worked out.
Yeah, that'll be our total when we work it out.
Thank y'all very much.
You're welcome. Sorry about that.
Too many emails for the board.
Thank you.
Okay, now we'll go back up to the January financial reports. Jennifer?
Going to report on the January 2020 financials. It's actually pretty comparable to the prior January as far as water consumption and billed revenue. This is a good example of a month in January where we don't have a lot of irrigation. So a lot of the increase that you're going to see is growth related. People aren't irrigating in January, so we kind of have an apples to apples comparison here. Water consumption for the month of January was up 4.38%. That does include that $2 million.
That's what I was going to say.
The bill of revenue is up 1.97% from last January. For the water department, we did report a loss for the month of $24,000. Last year, we did have a profit of $31,000. The difference in January 19 to January 2020, if you compare the two, the total revenues did increase by $23,000. However, our expenses increased. We've had significant field repair and maintenance. We've had, you know, a lot of concrete, which Johnny can speak to. Crews have really been busy going out and repairing line and relaying some asphalt. And then general staffing and benefit costs, we added a couple of staff to our budget last year. So just a reflection of a good economy. Year-to-date profit, we are behind the prior year by $457,000. A lot of that is the billed revenue and increased repair costs that we've experienced. And then the fiscal year to date, collection of access and impact fees have helped offset that reduced residential or commercial and industrial build revenue. We've had a favorable impact. We're at $501,000 year to date, where last year we are ahead of budget of $180,000. I'm sorry, I read the wrong line. So we're at $501,000 fiscal year 20, and last year we're at $360,000. Fiscal year 18, the access and impact fees were $496,000. So we're much more in line with fiscal year 18 access and impact fees. Sewer department, our consumption also was up from last January by 4.36%. Our bill revenue was up 3.21%. For the month of January, the sewer department had a profit of $225,000. It is down from the prior January of $281,000. Similar story as the water. The revenues did increase moderately by $18,000. However, our expenses increased by $7,000. Primarily due to depreciation, pollution control, sludge disposal for the month, and then general staffing and benefit costs. Fiscal year to date, we are less than the prior year by $50,000, but we are ahead of the budget year to date. We're on task. Access and impact fees for the year, we are at $1,008,000, which is ahead of budget by $279,000. Fiscal year 19, we're at $849,000, and fiscal year 18, we're at $974,000. Regarding lost water, for the year, which is 1 month, and for January, we're at 16%, and then as well as we're at 16% for the last 12 months, so we're holding consistent there. Restricted and unrestricted funds, we are at $35.5 million, which is an overall decrease from last January of $2.2 million. Kind of dispersed differently. The water funds, we are actually have increased $300,000. And the sewer funds, we have decreased as well from funding the phase one of the sludge handling facility from 20.6 million to 18.1. So 7.3 million of the 35.5 million is restricted for specific use. It has to be fit for such use. I'll keep this brief, but I wanted to show you comparative year-to-date financials. We're in a bit of a trend of a loss that our rate increase should be in effect April 1, and we'll see that in the May billing, so hopefully we'll turn that around. But we are trending to less than prior year profit. So, sewer department, again, we are moderately less than the prior year by 50,000. No clear significant decreases there, but holding pretty strong. And I mentioned the irrigation component of water. So this is our January 2020 cash flow, as we call it. It has our billed revenue, our customer consumption. You can see when irrigation is roughly comparable, the increase that is spread on the residential, the commercial, and the industrial. Industrial's made a quite a somewhat significant increase. It is trending up. And then the sewer holds pretty strong growth-related increases there as well. Do you have any questions?
Thank you. All right, Brian.
Good afternoon. A little bit of a lull in plan review for January. We saw five new projects come in the door, four of which were track additions at some of the Rogers Public Schools that really don't have a whole lot of effect on our utilities other than adjusting some manholes and making sure everything's out of the way, things of that nature. And we did have a addition at the Rogers Apartments off of Hollow Street. We're not seeing the same pattern of the I-49 corridor development. You can see, you know, a lot of stuff around Holly Whitaker and J.B. Hunt is really under construction right now. So I think that as far as that interchange, we're seeing a lot less on the design development side. So all these projects are kind of spread out a little bit more all over town. On our construction projects, salt handling facility, as far as all the process equipment, we're pretty much substantially complete. The other part of that is the site work, and really the weather has deterred a lot of the site work this month. It's either been freezing or wet, and so a lot of that clay subgrade material has just been unworkable for probably the last 3 or 4 weeks out there, so there really hasn't been a whole lot of progress on that. It's the same story for a lot of the street projects under construction right now. Crescent View water line is going to come off the list. That one's substantially complete. Shadow Valley backup generator, our design engineer Aaron Short will be presenting that quote to you later on. We're also getting ready to send 11th Street pump station improvements out to bid, along with Blossom Way and 11th Street elevated tank repaint. We're also getting pretty close on that one. The Train 2 design build is under contract. They're currently working on cleaning all the sludge out of that existing basin so that it can be inspected. And so even with the weather, they've been making some progress on that. And also the sanitary sewer master plan, we are under contract now with Freese and Nichols, and we're gonna be having a kickoff meeting on that in the next couple of weeks.
What is the Pinnacle Sanitary Sewer Improvement?
So the Pinnacle Sanitary Sewer Improvements is all the development that's going on along Pinnacle Hills Parkway is causing, is projected to exceed the capacity of the 8- and 10-inch sanitary sewer that's running through, this is the Champion subdivision through the golf course. And so what we've asked Freeze and Nichols to do as part of the master plan, as part of their study, is to prioritize that basin and tell us what the ultimate build-out capacity of that particular basin is going to be, so that we can be, turn around and up and upgrade the sewer in that running through the golf course. And that might end up being a parallel sewer main. We might be able to do some pipe bursting in there. But once we know the capacity, we'll evaluate our alternatives. Any other questions on that? I will mention, and Todd will speak a little bit more to the ongoing issues that we're having with the Thermafly dryer. If you'll remember, a couple of years ago when we started the solids handling facility project, Garber did a solids handling master plan. That master plan assumed that this dryer would live out its functional life into, I believe it was 2032 or something like that, at least another 10 years. Judging by all the issues we're having with that dryer, that does not appear to be the case. Every time something breaks, we pretty much have to re-engineer a part of that machine and have it custom fabricated. Todd and Brent and I have been looking at some other options, and we're kind of evaluating what our next move is going to be there. We did have a very good meeting with Springdale last week. We went down there last Friday and toured their new solids handling facility, where they installed fewer belt dryers, and they installed it with additional capacity exceeding what they currently produce. And they actually have a hopper on site to take Class B from other utilities. So I think we're going to try to put something together with Springdale as a short-term option to mitigate if the dryer goes down and we have to haul Class B. But we don't have any of those costs or anything yet. So we are looking at some options and backup plans in that regard. Street projects, I-4971, the interchange, we're complete with that portion. Pleasant Grove Road is ongoing. Like I said, there hasn't been a whole lot of activity out there in the last month due to weather. That slowed down significantly. First Street from Walnut to Chestnut is, I don't think they've broken ground on that yet. However, it is in the construction phase. We did spend a little bit of time this last month looking ahead at our budget out until fiscal year 2023. And with the new rate increase and looking at the acquisition of bond funding, after speaking with Jennifer, it looks like there's going to be three significant projects that will initiate starting to look at bond acquisition. That's going to be Walnut Street, Arkansas Street, and the solids handling phase two, basically replacing the dryer. So depending on the timing of that, those three projects really dictate when we're going to need to go out for bonds to prevent going below our capital reserves. And that's about all I have. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, Todd.
So we do our monitoring on the actual physical year, so we're starting over with January. The plant itself is processing well. We're not having a whole lot of trouble with that. again, ammonia on our 7-day max. This was actually a remnant from the previous month, the way the they count those. The this remnant month is actually only has like 2 days from this month on it, but the week ended January 1st, by the way they do it, so that that high 7-day average is actually a remnant from last month. So this month everything went fairly well. Fog, they're continuing to do a great job with the pre-treatment. I'll get into the details there, but just kind of moving along. The key thing I wanted to look at was our significant incidences we have out of the plant. Our new centrifuge is back online after during startup. The problem with their oiling system, and it took out one of the drive bearings. They got that out and replaced and back to us fairly quickly, and it's operating now. As Brian mentioned, train two, they're underway with cleaning out the basins. It looks like they're doing pretty well on that. They've got a little bit more to go, but they're doing well. We did have a fairly wet month, as Jennifer and Diane mentioned. We had an average flow of almost 11 MGD for January. Biggest issue is our Thermaflight. It's been operating in a diminished capacity. We're having trouble keeping up with it. Our solids that are coming in, we had a couple of industries actually that had problems with their treatment at the same time and sent us a heavier load of solids than typical. Plus, we were already behind and having trouble. Due to the lack of capacity, we're pretty much operating the dryer 24/7. It's just four of it is unmanned. Well, actually 24/5. We're not operating Saturdays and Sundays yet. I'm trying to prevent that just because I've only got so much staff. And so I'm spreading them pretty thin, operating 20 hours a day. So that's where we're at from an operational standpoint. It has developed a pretty serious symptom. I took a photo of it and sent it out. This is oil, and I attached some drawings. That tube comes from the solids contact area, and it is there to pull the humid air out of the solids contact area. And so once the air gets humid, we pull that out and keep the tank under a vacuum so that dry air can be pulled in so that it can transfer moisture back into the air easier. So the only way for oil to get into that solids contact area is for it to come in with the solids or for it to come through on our oil handling system that actually brings the heat from the boiler. The oil comes into contact with the central augers through these two end pieces here, and it comes into contact with the housing around the solids here. Either one of those two leaks is a pretty significant issue. So where does it come from? Potential, like I said, fats, oils, and grease in our biosolids themselves. We're processing them, and we're just getting some really greasy stuff. I hope that's the case, and that would explain why we're having trouble getting the throughput through the machine that we would typically get, because it's hard to separate. You know, the fat, oils, and grease have a higher boiling temperature than water, so it becomes really difficult to get that up to temperature to get it out of the solids. So it could be that. I'm not discounting that. Or our thermal oil infiltrating that into our product oil. We did collect a sample of the water that comes out of that thing and condensed the oil from the top of the water and sent it into a lab for comparison to match it to our actual thermal oil. I haven't got that sample back yet. I was expecting it today before I came, but it just didn't show up.
So are you having to add thermal oil to the system?
Not yet. We haven't had to add anything, and that's the other trick to this, but I don't really have a gauge that tells me how full it is either. And part of the reason for that is on a boiler, whenever it's cool, it takes up a fairly small space. As you heat it up, it expands itself. So putting a gauge on it is fairly difficult. And then it's a pressurized system, so having a place to actually measure it is difficult. We have all we have is essentially a low oil cutoff that will shut it down if you don't have enough oil in it, so you don't develop a hot spot, essentially, with nothing to transfer the heat that's generated. And that has not went off yet. And then to further complicate the issue, we have an actual known leak that's outside of the area that's coming from the pump that we haven't replaced yet, but we have on standby to potentially replace. But at any rate, if it does, it's likely fats, oils, and grease. If the sample comes back, it doesn't match. And nothing to see here other than, you know, we need to try to isolate where that came from. If it does match, the problems are pretty severe, and there's not really a good way to fix it. Either way, it's going to require about a 3-week shutdown to get the dryer cool enough internally, because we'll actually have to send a human up in there to inspect it and see where that leak is at. That's obviously a confined space and a nasty job. At best case, it's a small hole where something just knocked a hole in it and we patch it, but we're also going to have to check metal densities around to see if something else is thin or weak around that area. Don't know. Last time it cost us about $90,000 to haul solids for being down for a month. So, you know, that's lots of, you know, by the time we actually get somebody in to repair it, do things, something like that, $100,000 to $150,000. And that's likely worthwhile to do, just obviously because it costs us about $100,000 a month to be shut down. So payback on that's pretty quick. The problem becomes if it's in something, you know, more significant, like the actual housing itself, or the metal is degraded to a, you know, in several different places, then clearly, you know, going through and patchworking it is not very, you know, it just doesn't make sense whenever we're looking at potentially replacing that thing in our master plan on the next deal anyway, because costs are going to quickly approach or even exceed $1 million, because you've got some, depending on where it's broke or where it's deteriorating or things like that, you potentially have to essentially disassemble that whole building, pull pieces of it out, and those pieces are not really seen yet. So that could, if it's something structural within that machine, it could very well spill the end of that machine.
And who do we use to determine that?
I have tried to focus and use a fairly reliable, pressurized vessel certified welder. They're a company out of Rudy, Arkansas. They're called Advanced Welding. They also do work for Tyson's all over the country. But they're a very small firm, but they have engineers on staff, they have certified welders on staff, and they respond quickly. Those are the guys I typically call and use, and I would probably call those guys to start with, just because it's, again, a pressure vessel and will probably require welding. Other options, I suppose, would be you can call BCR Environmental. I don't know if you guys remember those guys, but we hired them to replace the bearings a while back, and I ran them off, and they had to fix what they did. So after they had two cracks at it, I certainly would be uneasy recommending them for something that would be this complicated. So those are my typical direction is to basically fix and re-engineer what's been broke on this thing. But something this intricate and a main part of the process itself, I would be hesitant to do that. You know, right now it's carbon steel is the main augers. There's two twin augers in there, and it's made out of carbon steel. I would be tempted to put a stainless in replace of it. I'm not sure why it wasn't to begin with. But I'm not sure, I'm not a thermal dynamics kind of guy. So I'm not sure how that changes the heat transfer. And so it becomes a little more difficult engineering process than just to go what's gonna last. So.
I think it's important to add that we did be able to meet with Springdale. They do have, they just started that process out how many weeks ago?
Well, they started it up the first time a month ago and found a problem during startup where they had undersized a pipe. And then they restarted it and were doing performance testing this last week whenever we were out there. I've got pretty good familiarity with that project. When they designed it at their ultimate build out and built the whole thing all at once. And they knew they wouldn't need all that capacity in the beginning, but their rationale was it allows them to have full redundancy in the interim as well. So they, in order to offset that, they said, well, what we could do is put a receptacle in for a third party to bring any solids in, and we could charge them our operating cost and help distribute our fixed cost off on that solids section of that. So it would, you know, essentially give them kind of the best of both worlds if they had somebody that was there and available to do that. Obviously the risk is they're going to protect their own plant. It's a new piece of equipment they're starting up. You know, if it goes bad, or if they have something they need to do or change or something along those lines, our solids will be the first to go, hey, we can't take them. So there's risk involved, but there's less risk involved than not having an option at all, essentially, for land application. So our total disposal cost should be less. The $90,000 a month that we were spending before was taking Class B solids and trucking it all the way to, you know, out of the watershed down south of 40, somewhere, and being land applied down there. And transportation is your largest cost in this kind of stuff. So by being able to haul just to Springdale, it obviously would be a lower cost for transportation. Although they will have obviously a dump fee and a processing fee and whatever else it takes to operate Springdale. So,
but it gives us some flexibility we didn't have.
Yeah.
So we've got several contingencies in place.
How old is that dryer now?
2013. Service. Mm-hmm. So we have roughly $2.5 million value on our books. So talking with Brent and Todd, at a minimum, we're going to reevaluate the useful life. And our depreciation, which will affect our bottom line. We still have some outstanding bonds issued, but we can look at some options to refinance those in the future with other bonds. And so it's not paid for and it's plus value. So it but we have to operate. We can't operate without.
Will
affect our
financials. Yep. Is that a 12, 15 year life, or?
We put a 20 year.
20.
Hmm. It looks like we're 7 years in and we're having significant issues. So I think we'll be good maybe in 12 years. Maybe we get that. So.
Not off to a good start.
Mm-mm. So we're just putting band-aids on it right now, basically. Kind of.
Yeah, kind of. I'd like to think it's a better dryer today than it was when it was delivered. It can at least be maintained and worked on, but its longevity on its internals, not a lot I can really do about that.
Yeah.
Keep us posted. Let us know what you need.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thanks.
Especially if I've reached through as far as production.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Johnny.
Just want to touch on a few things. As Jennifer said, our water leaks kind of continue to be a problem for us. We were down 6 this month from our previous month, but as she was saying, our problem before where most of our leaks happen behind the back of curb or somewhere up in there, we've been having an abnormal amount of breaks on underneath sidewalks out in the street, so we're having to repair a lot of street repairs, a lot of sidewalk repairs and everything, and those are trying to find a contractor right now to do some of those things. It's expensive because they're so busy, you know, they're going to charge you an arm and a leg anyway over the price, but we have to get them repaired and fixed. So our flush numbers were looking good, even though we have had a truck down for about 3 months with a pump problem. Hopefully we'll be coming to you next month with possibly a solution for that pump. We're still waiting on some pricing because of the we've rebuilt the pump 3 times, and they say it can no longer be rebuilt, so we're needing to try to find a new one, and they can't find one to match what we need right now. So and hopefully we'll see an increase in our valve exercising program and leak detection since we've added a person to do each. We now have somebody that's running our valve exercise machine plus a person doing our leak detection to try to get caught up on possibly some of the leaks that we need to find. We finally did get our new listening equipment that you gave us approval for a couple of months ago. We hope this will help us pinpoint some of those leaks. We should have a trainer sometime here next week. That has changed now since I put this out, because we have to get a new computer before we can start using it, because they put Windows 10 on our laptop and it killed the laptop, so now we're needing to get a new laptop. So so hopefully we can get the trainer out here the following couple of weeks, as soon as we can get a computer in for that system. And and hopefully what this will do is we'll be able to relieve some of the dig ups that we've been having to do, because we've been missing the leak by 4 or 5 feet. And you know, with the new listening stuff, this is supposed to pinpoint the leak a little bit better and everything for us. So we're hoping that this will help us fix that problem of not digging up as many spots in the street. So any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Brent.
Thank you for listening to the calls. We had our Depository Investment Committee meeting immediately before this meeting. Item number 7 on new business, approval of modification to the investment policy. We did not have any modifications, so skip that. The approval of designation of banks and banking institutions. This is that thing we do every year to make sure that they are approved by the Arkansas Banking Commission. So the committee recommended to you, the commission, to request approval for the current depositories, which are Arvest, First Western Bank, First National Bank of Fort Smith, Simmons First Trust Company, and Regions Bank. So we just need a motion to approve those.
I'll make a motion to approve those banks you just mentioned, Arvest, Simmons, Western, or First Western, and First National Bank of Fort Smith.
In Regions. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the designation of the banks and banking institutions to be Arvest, First National Bank, First Western Bank, Simmons Bank, and Regions Bank. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And the Depository Board also recommended item 9, recommended to the Commission, would like a motion to approve approval to advertise for CD placement. We'll put out a bid or a notice for anyone that's interested in our CDRS placement, and then we'll have to come back to you to approve that list, but we think right now we have 2. And we could probably do a little better with more. And it'll also, there's several people over the course of a year, several institutions that do call Jennifer requesting that. So this will be a chance to get them on that.
OK.
I'll make a motion to, for the approval to advertise for CD placement.
Okay.
Second.
We have a motion and a second for approval to advertise for CD placement. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Passes. Thank you. Okay, Jennifer, you're up.
If you recall last night, we requested, definitely was last night, we requested, that's too much December. We requested permission to pass a resolution to implement a customer service agreement form. We have done that effective January 1, and it's working great. Actually, our staff in the front have said it is causing customers to be aware of potential fees and items and deposits and what their understanding is with Rogers Water, and that this is a contract and customers appear to be paying attention to what they're agreeing to. But as we're using this, the ladies in the front asked that we make a couple of changes. The first one is resolution number 20-03, which is approving a Spanish language version of the revised form. Our ladies, Spanish speaking ladies in the office said, you know, we're explaining to some of our Spanish speakers what they're agreeing to. It's number one, taking time, and number two, they should understand what they're signing and agreeing to. So attached in this is a Spanish version, which Robert has helped facilitate. We used a translator that the court system uses, so it has been translated by a court-approved translator. And then also, which is related, as the ladies in the front have been using this form, they said, you know, we're finding that if we move the information, we add the signature line to the bottom, you know, we kind of reformat this form, so the substance of the form has not changed, but we have reformatted it for ease of use, and so we believe the customers will also fill it out completely and more appropriately. We did add a line to list the customer's employer. That's the only additional change that we have made. We have found some people are easier to find if we can tie them by employer when we're trying to locate accounts or delinquent accounts. So the attached form, the first one right here, reflects the change that we made. Again, it's largely a reformatting with no substance change in itself. And then the second exhibit is the Spanish version, which we believe will help us better share the customers.
Okay. We have a motion.
Yes. Make a motion to accept the changes in the agreement form.
Okay, we have a motion.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adopt a resolution adopting a revised customer service agreement form for the Rogers Water Utilities, approving a Spanish language translation of the revised form and for other purposes. Resolution number 20-03. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Resolution number 20-03 passes.
And one final item, usually every year we just like to show the description, kind of what are the trends that occur in the water and sewer departments, largely financial related, but some other factors, just to kind of give you a picture view. You know, I get up here and say numbers, but sometimes a picture's nice way to explain what's going on and what's normal. So first off, the blue means water, green means sewer, purple means waste and body. So for the water department, we're looking at June 2011 fiscal year, which is fiscal year 11, to last fiscal year. So we are looking historically because those are our obvious numbers. You can see the last 4 years since our rate increase that we had effective 7/1/15, water department has been operating largely in a very favorable profit. As you saw later, we're kind of reversing that trend, but that right there is a result of higher customer usage, favorable development, and that rate increase that the commission and the council allowed us to pass in 2015. Interest, very positive impact. We have been trending up, increasing, you know, from roughly over 100,000 in fiscal year 11 to almost 250,000. That's doubling our interest income. I will say interest income is starting to trend down again, but only time will tell what that result will be next year.
So is the interest income included in the water income?
It is, and actually the higher interest income and access and impact fees are helping offset that reduced build revenue that we've been experiencing. So it's been a nice bonus to have that to help offset that bottom line. Water consumption, very good picture of how dependent it is on weather. We have had a standard 2% growth every year, but you can see this line does a little up and down, and that's a result of weather. For our reserves are very strong in the water department. Back in 2011, we had 13.5 million, and we've been able to increase that as a result of refunding some bonds and calling them 2008B bonds in 2016. So paying off some debt and making some good refinancing choices, we've increased that to 17.5 million. Which our minimum reserves are a little over 11 million for reference. You can see how great of a job the utility has been able to pay off our bonds to date, going from roughly 28 million down to a little over 20 million since 2011. So that definitely helps our interest expense and gets us more money to operate without raising rates unless we have to. Access and impact fees, they are, you know, they're trending up, but they're a little more unpredictable. Last year we had a little bit of a dip. We've been climbing consistently every year until about 18. We had a little bit of a dip, but we are trending back up. Now for the sewer department, it's much more stable on the income side. We've stayed roughly within that 2.5 million to 2018 was our highest, a little over 3.5 million consistently. Sewer income, doing great. We went from almost 140,000 to a little over 300,000 last year. Again, as a result of the increased interest rates, the investment policy, and extending some of our investments a little longer in the economy. Sewer consumption, it does, it's not exactly the same as water, but it does mirror water because we build sewer along with water. Largely, we do cap out residential. Last year being one of our higher years of sewer consumption. Our sewer total reserves, back in 2011, about 18.5 million, going up to about a little over 20 million last January. And sewer bonds payable, we have went from $40 million of bonds to about 14 million in 2011. So we've had a series of bond calls and early payoffs and refundings that have really helped save us some interest along the years. Access and impact fees, very same story as water. The continual increase until about 2018 and then started trending down. Highest point at about 1.5 million. So our income, everything changes in our expenses, but fever water remains consistent. It has increased every year by about 2 or 3 cents, from about $1.22 to $1.36 in 19, and now we're up to $1.38. So the water, fever water, is a significant cost, you'll see in the other slides, of our water operation expenses. Our sewer employees, back in 2011, we had roughly 55, and now we're up to about 71. Had quite a bit of growth in this area, and more employees are needed to staff. This last slide is just to give you a picture of what our future debt payments look like. This is over the next 10 years, from fiscal year 20 to fiscal year 28. The way our bonds are currently structured, we have attempted to keep our bond payments and interest very flat so that we don't have huge spikes in principal due every year. We know this expense and we can adjust for it every year. And I like this graph because it shows exactly how much Rogers is growing. So back in 2011, we had almost 28,000 water connections. As of last fiscal year in June, we had about 33,000. So that is an average of 2% both in the water and sewer. Sewer numbers a little less, but same consistent growth, going from 20,000 to almost 24,000. And this is a different graph that you've seen. I just kind of wanted to give you a picture. So this is looking at the number of manual payments. When I say manual means it involves a customer service representative to help that payment go through. So customers walking in the door, no payments, it needs a person to process that payment. Automated means our CSRs don't have to touch that charge. It goes through our credit card processor, or they go online to our phone payment or do something that our staff doesn't have to be involved in. So back in 2011, you can see 66% of our transactions were manual. Probably no surprise to you guys, in 2019, only 34% of our transactions are manual. However, that doesn't always mean less work, because there are different areas that require our attention rather than payments. But it's just kind of interesting to see how that dynamic has just virtually flip-flopped in less than 10 years. So if you combine these two, our total payments were $270,000 in 2011, and now there are over 325,000 number of transactions that we have. So, and to give you a picture view of our water and sewer revenue by customer type, we have the residential in blue, commercial in green, and industrial in red. Residential is, it fluctuates a little more with the weather and our customer growth. Commercial, we are just trending up gradually, and industrial remains pretty flat largely overall. And that same story is true in the sewer. And I wanted to show you, we're nearing the end, so bear with me. I wanted to show you what the size of the higher expenditures were, which is our expenses, in 2011 versus what they are in 2019. So let me see if I can expand this out just a little. So in 2011, our Beaver Water purchases, which is a large majority of our costs in the water, were at 42%. In 2019, they're 44%. So while that cost has increased, it has roughly increased in proportionate share to 2011. Our depreciation, which is a non-cash expense, but it is an expense, it's the use of our assets as we use them, has gone from 24% to 25%. Interest has gone from 7% to 9%. Again, with those bonds paid off, we've actually reduced that interest expense. Salaries and benefits are roughly the same. Interest expense, I'm so sorry, has been cut in half from 14% to 7% of our expenses. So that's just a result of paying off that debt and having some savings where we can. But largely overall, you can see the share of expenses has not changed over 9 years. So we try to do the best that we can to move things in according to the economy, to how we were doing things, and taking care of the residents abroad as we try to keep our expenses in line where we can. Same for the sewer. A little bit different, but not much. Back in 2011, depreciation is our most significant line item, going from 38% to 41% in 2019. The interest right here is 19% in the green, gone to 4%. Huge savings there. Benefits and payroll, 6% to 11%. We have added staff with pollution control and just the nature of the solids handling that we've had to accommodate. And then our salaries expense, 14% and 20%. Again, those go hand in hand with the salaries and benefits. But largely, the pie doesn't look that much different, and we try to be very cognizant of that whenever we make decisions. So. Other expenses, just for your knowledge, include like utilities, chemicals, postage, repair and maintenance, sludge disposal, insurance, those kinds of things. Leave us all a happy.
Great information. Thank you.
Thank you.
Kind of puts it all in perspective.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been working on trying to get a generator, backup generator out of the Shadow Valley site. We've worked with actually Riggs and Cat, but they've gone through their the source well program. So that's a state bid that they've accepted, and it's already been approved to their setup. And we're just kind of tagging on to that. And this is the full breakdown of all the costs there and kind of what it all includes. There is a little bit of extra warranty that we get by going through Sourcewell. But we've got the full total here, that's what we're looking at. So just for all the work, we're looking at like $89,000 and then the sales tax on that. I talked with Jennifer. She said that this is the worst case scenario, which is 9.5%. There are some benefits that we can get back from that. So this is just our worst case on the sales tax. And then I have a 4% contingency on there. They said they are going to work with us on getting the generator tied into our SCADA system. They do not foresee any problems, but worst case scenario that we have to call some money in and actually get this tied into our SCADA. We're not expecting to, but we want to be on the safe side.
So this is ran by natural gas?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Is that pretty much the way most of those are now? I mean, I'm not familiar with it, whether it's diesel or gas. Okay. And there's already natural gas out there, I'm assuming?
We'll have to get a meter, but yes, sir, it's right there at the street.
Just tie into it?
Yes, sir.
And that's a state bid?
Yes, sir. The source well comes through. It's a part of the state bid that they go through, and then they pick the best price. And it's already been bid out, so we can just tack on to it.
Okay. And we do we have this in our budget?
We can make it work. We are significantly under budget with our capital purchases for the year, so I don't see a problem.
Okay. Well, I'll make a motion to approve the $101,049.05 for the Shadow Valley equipment and installation purchase.
Okay. A second.
We have a first and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The bid of $101,049.05 for the Shadow Valley lift station generator passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
There being no further business, I adjourn the meeting.